petition number 21643, Reel 2.
Jim Povey, Reel 2.
Pardon?
That's Reel 2. You were just saying that you kept yourselves dry.
Kept ourselves dry, we kept ourselves clean. And were pulled into a farm one night. And there was a chicken house. And I was the instigator of a lot of the getting the rations, getting the extra food that we didn't get in our rations. And there was this chicken house. And I said to my mate, right, your turn. And he went into this chicken house to get some eggs. We hadn't had eggs, you see. And the farmer came round and locked up the chicken house while he was here. So we didn't break it open. He just sat it out and we did. When the farmer came round in the morning, he unlocked the chicken run. He didn't know my mate was in there. And when the farmer drifted off, my mate came back for some eggs. We wouldn't break it open, you see. We weren't vandals. We were well disciplined as British troops, well disciplined. And while we had to look after our own tummies, we wouldn't break anything or destroy anything. I remember our troop commander, he was as blind as a bat. This was in training, of course. And we were about to go through another village and we need, oh, bread wasn't rationed. There was one or two things you could get off the ration. And I said, right, if I wasn't number one, I wasn't in charge of the gun team. I said, when we get into the next village, we're going to break down outside the shop. And this officer, I forget his name now, he came by and he said, do you need assistance? I mean, this was an endurance thing where you help yourself all the way through. No, sir, we shall be all right. So he floated on in his jeep. And when everybody had gone past, the rest of the regiment had gone past, we went into the shop and we bought some bread and a bit of this and a bit of that. We got stuck up. We got stuck up with our rations. And then we went on like this the whole of, well, it seemed to be whole of 43. Then I was sent home on Christmas leave. Oh, we just started to train on a new 17-pounder anti-tank gun. It was the one that would stop the Tiger and the Panther. The Panther tank had got 13 inches of steel, solid steel. And we were told that it was the only tank, the only gun, the 17-pounder, that could face that one head on. And we trained up with the 17-pounders after being on 6-pounders and whatnot. So we went on leave 1943. And I was told to report to Kimberley Hall in Norfolk. That was here. And I didn't know then. But what had happened during the back end of 1943, they brought the 7th Armoured Division home from Italy.
Don't get up because of the microphone, please, Jim.
Oh, sorry.
Cut things there.
That's all right.
Yes, that's all right.
And I reported to Kimberley Hall to 257 Battery, 65th Anti-Tank Regiment, Norfolk Yeomanry. They had done a good record in the desert, apparently. I've got a photo I'll show you a bit later on. They'd gone up from Alamein. Monty said they were with me from Alamein to Berlin via Egypt, Italy, Thetford Forest, France, Holland and Belgium. And that is the way we tackled it. So, the boys back from the desert used to pull our legs about getting your knees brown. The meaning of that was, if you've been in the desert, you had your socks and your shorts and you had white knees. You had to get your knees brown before you were one of them. They were a rum lot, but they were good boys. They taught me how to stand fast when you were dead scared. Oh, yes. If anybody tells me he wasn't scared, I'd say either he's a liar or he's drunk. Because once those 88s and mortars opened up, you've got to be nincompoop not to be scared. Really, you really had. So we went from Kimberley Hall up to West Ham Stadium and we slept literally on the terraces, which were planks of wood and stumps of trees. West Ham Stadium. And then rumours will abound in war, of course. They took one of our batteries to the East India dock and put them on board. And then they take them off again. You know what that was for? Fifth column, German spies and intelligence. Oh, they're embarking. Oh, they're coming off again. What are they up to? Will they? Will they or won't they? Anyway, we moved up to East India Dock one day. And we embarked. I don't know, I forget the name of the ship now. We embarked there at East India Docks. The Merchant Navy slung hammocks for us. We were going to be on there a couple of 3 days before we set sail, you see, on board. And we had great fun. Because we were young men, you see, we didn't really realise what we were going into. Not really, we didn't. And we were playing with these hammocks and thing. And then one night we moved out into the Solent to rendezvous. And we were there another night, I suppose, or thereabouts. Then one morning, the engine started up. And the word went round, we're on our way, wherever did we go? We didn't know where we were going, even then. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, we were called up on deck to have the master plan explained to us. And as we got up on deck, well, this is a bit I would not have missed, really. As we looked up the channel, you felt you could walk from ship to ship. You felt you could, of course. And the master plan was explained to us that we were going to... The 6th Airborne had gone in for Pegasus Bridge during the night. The gliders and everything, the preemptive strikes had taken on. I think our secretary, our treasurer of the Normandy Veterans Knowledge Branch, our treasurer, Arthur Wood, he was one of the first, if not the first, into Normandy by parachute. To organise the French resistance and cause as much chaos as he could.
What happened to you on the Channel crossing?
We kept on and we didn't land till D plus three. D plus three, we were called up on deck and the scramble nets were over the side. And all the guns, the trucks and the guns, the quads that used to tow our guns, had been loaded into the landing craft. And the scramble nets were down the side. And my old mate said, here we go, mucker. Muckers. We used to call each other, we used to muck him. Share everything, we used to share everything. A cigarette end, the bottom of a cup of tea, we used to share anything we got. And he said, here we go, mucker. And we went down into the landing craft. And our driver, Pip Kelly, looked a bit like Punch. Great big 6-footer he was. He drove us down the ramp and we were on top of the quad, I remember. All young chaps full of it, taking the mickey out of him because he was up to his waist in water in the driving seat. And we went on to Gold Beach and up through the town. There were little terrace houses with front gardens with little brick walls around, like you get in any terrace houses, really. And I remember seeing for the first time there was one or two dead Germans in each front garden. That was my first christening, I suppose, of seeing things. They'd moved our boys, of course. We lost a lot, but they had moved our boys. And I'd left these dead Germans. And we went through this town. And we took the road to Caen. We got down there and there was a hold-up. It seems there was a German anti-tank gun holding up the proceedings. I remember. Oh, that had to be dealt with first. We didn't do that. Other people did that. And then we moved on to Villers-Bocage.
What was your job with 257 battery at the time?
I was a gunner. Every gunner had to do every job. He had to be a loader, a gun layer, that's the bloke that fires a gun. He had to do everything. He had to know how to do everything, as we found out later to come.
And which troop are you in?
Pardon?
Which troop are you in? Which troop were you in?
Troop? Our troop commander's name was Lieutenant Bogey, if you like. You've heard of Colonel Bogey? Well, he was Lieutenant Bogey. And it was a job of our regiment, the 65th Anti-Tank Regiment, to be put near the enemy, very close, and draw their fire and make them break cover so that observers in the rear could see what was going on and then bring down the support fire. That was a theory. It was a very dodgy situation, really, to play this game. Because once they broke cover, it was our job then to take out the firing mechanism of the gun and fall back to MT lines. Because once you got your gun in position in that sort of situation, there was no chance of getting your vehicle from MT lines back into the line to draw your gun out, to tow your gun out. So what happened then, they used to send the tanks in then to sort them out and tow our guns out. This happened quite a bit at Philipsburg Coast. You'll ask any Normandy veteran, of course, and everybody's been there. They know what you're talking about. We started to fall back one day, and we had to get through. Villers-Boe Coast then was just a little village church, a bit like this place, Brook, I suppose. And we had to go through the churchyard to the other side with our rifles and Sten guns. And every time we made a move, they opened up with their Smeisser. They were in the village church. And we had to come back and get down, and then we'd have another go. Finally, we made it. Philipsburg Coast, that was a sticking point of Normandy, one of them. And then we moved around here and there. We moved into one position, and they told us that if we saw a German patrol, we were not to intercept. We were to let them through, and they would be picked up in the rear. They wanted them alive for interrogation. So we got wind that there was a patrol coming in. You see, when we put our guns in position, the first thing we did after that was dig a trench, either for one or the five of us. And this one was for five of us. And we got into this trench with our Sten guns cocked. And we could hear their feet. They were very good, though, the Germans. Excellent at camouflage. And they came near. And we heard one say, "Hans, Klaus, they've spotted us. We got our sting gun, Freddy. Only in case we were attacked." And I went over our trench. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They weren't looking for trouble, you see. And we weren't, because we wanted them at the rear. Well, that worked as well, because they did pick them up in the rear. I don't know what the outcome of that was. So we went to a few more sticking places. Oh, Tilly. Tilly Cellar, is it? Yeah, in French. Tilly Cellar. We did a bit round there. Same sort of game. And then...
Did you knock many German tanks out?
Well, it was our function to draw them out, you see. We were in a field one day with a gun sighted through the gate. We were at the side of the hedge here. And the gun was sighted through the gate, waiting for this tiger to come down along the road into our sights. One up the spout, about that big, you know, with a 17 pounder shot in the end. That was a cartridge, of course.
About 2 feet.
Pardon?
2 feet.
A good 2 feet, yes. And we waited and waited for him to come up the road. We could see him through the hedge. And just before he got into our sights, another one of our guns on his left flank opened up and done for him. So that was one we'd missed. All this is with hindsight, of course. We had to draw them out and then let the tank sort them out. That was our main function, really. And we did that with great success, I think. And then we went through the night from Villers-Bocage. Oh, the gory bit at Villers-Bocage. My ears had already been damaged and I didn't hear much. With shellfire, 88. Mortars. I'd got very bad hearing. And I saw our number one look at somebody else, and one of the crew, and he went, they could hear this gunfire, which I couldn't. Small arms, and I couldn't hear it. So we went down to this farmyard at Villers-Bocage, and we looked into this farmyard. And there was a whole platoon of infantry on the floor. Dead as a dodo, all of them.
British? Mm-hmm. British? Our troops?
Oh, yes. We were supported by the first six Queens. Our troops, oh, yes. But there's nothing we could do at that point.
How had they been killed?
Pardon?
How had they been killed?
They were coming through this farmyard. And the Germans had got something in there. Smythe was probably, that was their favourite, their Smythe's. there. And they just knocked them all out. And I don't know, that was awful. But we were to see more yet, you see. Then we went to Cormont, a place called Cormont, where the bombers had been over the night before. And they just blown the Germans out of their dugouts. And as we looked into these craters, there was enough to build a house in it and still look down onto the roof. The craters were so deep. Yes. It's not our branch of the Normandy Veterans. We run a schools team. And the message to the school children is this. There is no glory in war. And when you've been there and you've had some, you know what we're talking about. Which brings me to another point. People now, women now, want to be frontline troops. Do they really know what's involved? I don't think they do. We didn't. First light and last light, we used to stand too. And if the Germans were going to come, they would come creeping through the grey of the morn or the mist or the smoke they'd put down. If they were going to come, first light or last light. So I don't know. It's not a nice business. When I joined up, keen to do my bit, I didn't know what was involved, if I'm honest. But you stand. I was afraid, all right, and so was all my friends. Then we travelled overnight from Villers-Bocage down to Mont Pecon in France, in Normandy. We used to say it was the only pimple in Normandy. Although we didn't know about it then. And we were put within 100 yards or less. They'd already been pushed back to the base of Mont Pecon. It was the last bit, I think, of the Bocage country. Because we drew their fire. We'd gone in at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then, but they watched us. They used to watch us. Our troop commander would say, "They're over there." But you couldn't see them. They were masters at camouflage, the Germans. In fact, I'd say the 7th Armoured Division and the 21st Panzer Division, we had mutual respect for each other. As I understand it from the boys in the desert, back from the desert, we had this, they were opposite. 7th Armoured Division and the 21st Panzer Division were always opposite to each other. opposing each other. But we had respect for each other. Funny sort of business. And we got they knew we were there behind this hedge. We hadn't got a dog in horse chance of hitting anything anyway. Like I said, we were put there to draw their fire and make them break cover.